Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am your host, Reggie Darden, and I have another wonderful guest with me today. I got Mr. Kim Wang, and we are going to get into his journey, his story. He is not a Kenpoist. He's a primary art is a Taekwondo, and so we're gonna get into his journey and whatever other items that we get into. He also is the host of his own podcast, the Kim Huang Podcast Experience, and so we'll talk about that. And before we started recording, we talked a little bit of the podcast gear and the podcast things that you need to do. So we're definitely going to have to talk about that offline here. I need to get some more podcasting strategies here. I'm still I think I've moved up from a white belt now. I think I've managed to get my yellow belt in podcasting at this point, but we'll see how things go here. But I usually like to kick things off by just giving a kind of brief rundown of my background. I currently train in 5 different arts at this point: American Kenpo, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, Hapkido, and Capoeira. And also done some Taekwondo and some boxing in my day. And we'll see. You know, if we have some similar stories to share as we go along. But going to go ahead and turn things over to my guest here. So how did the martial arts find you? Where did it all get started? And we'll just kind of run it from there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, first off, I want to say thank you very much for allowing me to be a guest on your podcast and to be on this platform. It is an honor and a pleasure just to be in the presence of another podcaster. So much love and respect to you, sir, and, you know, much continued success. As far as visually what attracted me or how I found the martial arts was, I grew up in Annapolis, Maryland, so not far from Baltimore, Maryland, and not far from Washington, D.C. And every Saturday and Sunday on the local TV channels, there would always be something like a black belt theater or kung fu theater or something like that. And I remember that vividly because it would be like an hour before, it would be like pro wrestling, because I'm a big pro wrestling nerd. You know, I you know, watch like the WWE and the old school NWA, WCW days and so forth. So I would watch that. And then at 12 noon, it would segue into black belt theater and kung fu theater. And I would watch the movies and I would just be in awe about, you know, what these guys are doing. You know, I knew that they were actors and they were portraying characters and so forth, because acting is a passion of mine, as I'm a local film actor. But when I saw them do all, like, you know, the choreography and stuff like that, I started asking my friends and family members, oh, what are they doing? Oh, they're doing martial arts. And I just thought, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, I'm really interested in, you know, this type of activity, you know, because it's really visually, it's great. It looks cool. You know, back then as a kid, logic, you might get a lot of cool points. So, you know, that's where it started off, as in, like, I saw it for the first time visually.
Gotcha. Yeah, I too grew up watching the Kung Fu Theater, the Black Belt Theater, the Shaw Brother movies, the 36 Chambers. You know, that was my jam. The Chinese Super Ninjas and sort of those things, and then, you know, of course, right, Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan movies. Got me all into that as well. So I can see that. So when did you actually start training in Taekwondo?
I started training in Taekwondo when I was around, I think, like 7 or 8. And the reason being was, when I was really young, I used to get picked on a lot, you know, as a kid. Back in the days in the 80s, growing up in Annapolis, Maryland, there wasn't a lot of Asian diversity as there is today. So, you know, when, you know, guys saw me, the bullies saw me, it was like I was an easy target, and they would pick on me because I was different. You know, I wasn't, you know, not to enter race as an evil thing, but I wasn't the white kid. I wasn't the black kid. I was a different kid. You know, when they saw me, they automatically think, oh, this kid's Chinese and he speaks Chinese, and they try to speak the mock Chinese thing. So they would always beat me up, and I never understood why, because I never really did anything to them. You know, I was just thinking to myself, well, if I keep to myself and if I'm just, you know, nice and respectful to people, you know, they're going to return that favor. And then one day it got really bad where I got beat up really bad, where it was like 4-1, 5-1. And my best friend, who lives like one door, you know, away from me, like, you know, one house away from me, saw that it was happening, and he ran down and he started to take apart these bullies one by one, you know, and he was doing all these things that we would see on, you know, black belt theater and kung fu theater. And I'm like thinking, what the heck is going on? You know, he was like blocking, moving, punching dudes, kicking people, you know, folding them up in a kind of like an Aikido maneuver and throwing them around, to the point that, you know, he busted them up so bad that they, you know, ran for high water, you know. And then as soon as, you know, he picked me up and asked me if I was okay, his dad comes around and, you know, he wants to know what's going on. He's like, what the heck just happened here? And my friend was like, Dad, we got to do something. You know, Kim's my best friend. You know, he's getting picked on a lot. He's getting beat up a lot. I don't want to see that happening to him, because, you know, that's my friend and I love him. Can we do something? So he drives all of us back over to the neighborhood. And he wanted to know if there was like a parent that was actually home at the time at my house. And I said, yeah, my mom's home. And he's like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and talk to your mom. And I said, wait a minute, I'm going to get in trouble here. This is not a good thing. No, it's going to be okay. This was not your fault. I'm going to make sure of that. He knocks on the door. My mom answers it. And of course, typical mom fashion, they're like, oh my God, what happened? What happened to you? Why are you look like you're getting beat up here? And I remember my friend's dad telling us, go outside in the backyard. Let me go ahead and talk to her. The story that I was told by him in the later years is that they were talking for about an hour. And obviously, you know, my mom wanted me to be in a safe position, because she never in her life, she grew up in Vietnam. She never knew anything about, you know, self-defense or fighting or anything of that stuff, because that's not in her environment. That's not what she did. And she doesn't know that stuff. She's not equipped for that type of, you know, situation. So after the conversation, myself and my best friend, we were located. And my friend's dad said, go over to your house, get like, you know, some sweatpants or some shorts and a t-shirt, and come back over here and meet me in 5 minutes. Well, I got everything and I met him in 2, because, you know, I didn't know what was going on, but he was the type of guy that if you're going to go somewhere with him and he tells you to be here at a specific time, you better be there. You know, it's very regimented. So we hop in his white Chevrolet pickup truck, and I didn't know where we were going. I mean, for all I knew, we were either going to get ice cream at the Baskin Robbins or we were going to go out and play basketball. Either way, I benefited, because that's two things that I like. And we go over to a shopping center that's not far from where we live. And I'm like, wait a minute, why are we turning in here? I don't know this area. And we go down the hill and he parks the truck. And I look at the sign and it says, you know, karate. And I look at my best friend and I said, what is this place? What's going on? oh, well, that's the, you know, the karate school that, you know, I train at, you know, and my dad's the owner. He's a black belt, and he is the teacher and the operator of the school. And I just said, no way, you're lying to me. Get out of town. He's like, look, if I'm lying, I'm flying, dude. But I'm telling you, this is, you know, I've been training here for a long time, and I think this is the answer for, you know, your problems of not getting bullied anymore. And as soon as I got in there, it was really wild. It was like, you know, watching the Karate Kid like in live version, you know, in real time, you know, saw a lot of people from a Kid Logic, you know, wearing pajamas, but you know, it's the gi, you know, the martial arts gi or uniform. They're all kicking and punching and moving around, doing certain things. I get into the floor, and the gentleman, my friend's dad, said, "I want you to go in. I want you to bow towards the flags. When you go over to the restroom, bow before you go into the restroom, change up. When you get out, bow and meet me right over here where the punching bag is." And that was like literally the beginning of the rest of my life when it came to, you know, my actual birth of training in the martial arts.
Very nice, very nice. I like that you have the Karate Kid story of you know, the Mr. Miyagi saving you from the Cobra Kai. Can just visualize that you're laying on the ground and kind of seeing, hey, they're like, there's somebody here, and there's a bunch of other people that are beat up, and it's like, what's going on?
Right, right.
Kind of that little haze there. So I like
Yeah,
that.
yeah.
I
For
like that.
sure, for sure.
Yeah.
It was definitely unexpected because it's one of those things that, at least for me at the time, you know, you never really expect someone that you know to be engaged in that type of way of life. You know, I knew that they were, you know, nice people and they were hardworking people, you know, in their lives because at the time, you know, my friend's dad used to work for, it used to be called CMP Telephone Company, but later on it was, you know, Verizon. And his mom, you know, worked in the financial world. So I saw them like that. There was no way in a million years, if you told me that they were martial artists and they, you know, owned their own school, I would have told you, no way. You put something in my Pepsi Cola. This is wrong. No way. You're lying to me. But that's how it was.
Very cool, very cool. Now, what I guess what version, what style of Taekwondo?
The style that I'm in is like the Muay Thai style of Taekwondo. So it's very karate based. It's not like what you see in the Olympics or anything of that sort. This is something a little bit more, at least for me, I feel like it's a little bit more traditional, you know, because you have the best of both worlds of punching and kicking. And in the classic, you know, jump kicks that are, you know, very famous with Taekwondo.
Now, usually try and stay away from anything controversial, but the Olympic style Taekwondo, there's a lot of I don't know, I guess a kind of a dust up about the way that the Olympic Taekwondo is done, and you know, there's not a lot of fans of that style, and so since you're much closer to that than me, I'm curious as to kind of what your thoughts are on kind of the Olympic style and kind of the I don't know, I guess controversy just around how it's maybe getting away, it's kind of too far removed from traditional Taekwondo, and just kind of what are your thoughts on that?
I usually have a philosophy that, you know, not all martial arts in general are bad because, you know, it definitely has its good points. And, you know, with whatever martial arts school or system that you go to, the purpose of it is very international, that, you know, it teaches you, you know, self-discipline, it teaches you self-defense, and it teaches you all the positive qualities a life that martial arts can teach you. Whatever it is that they do, you know, I let them do what they do, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You know, I'm not going to be in the business of trashing other arts or, you know, or so forth. I just feel like, hey, if it works out for you, that's great. That's wonderful. And, you know, God bless you for it. But if it's not working and you have a lot of controversy or a lot of negative press, at that point, I think you really need to sit down and really analyze the situation and ask yourself, what is going on? What is wrong with the situation? And how can we rectify that situation?
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, there's a, needs to be a more, I guess, open mind, open conversation about, okay, well, if there's, if people have a problem with this way, let's talk it out and figure out a way to kind of better it for everyone instead of just going back and trashing this style or that style. And
right. I mean, the worst thing that could happen for anybody in general, it's like, let's say you're a person that is interested in a martial art. And let's say, for example, you took Olympic style, you know, Taekwondo. And that's not bad because, you know, hey, at least you're making the attempt at the journey of trying to figure out, you know, what you are and what art fits you best. And if you disband from that art, it's not to say that, you know, you're disrespecting the art. It's just that, you know, for you as the martial artist, that's probably not the style for you. And that's okay. You know, I mean, there might be like a lot of people in our lifetime that probably did that. Like, hey, I started out with, let's say, Olympic Taekwondo, or I started with, you know, Tong Sudo, which is another form of Korean karate. And I just found out that it wasn't for me. And I found out later on in life that the Japanese counterpart, like maybe like Shotokan and Goju Ryu karate, are something in my wheelhouse. Or, you know, this style of kung fu is more my style. And that's perfectly all right. That's totally cool because you're just finding your way. And that I think is, you know, should be embraced, is that any martial artist is just trying to find their way, what works for them and what works for the cause of, you know, their enlightenment or, you know, their physical challenge.
Very nice. Now, have you trained in any other arts, or is it just Taekwondo all day, every day?
Well, I would say that Taekwondo was definitely the if this was a pie, I would say that Taekwondo took about 95% of it, for sure. When I moved out of Annapolis and moved over closer to a town called Silver Spring, Maryland, which is not far from the Washington, D.C. borderline, I literally had to start over from scratch because, you know, I left that Taekwondo school, you know, and I had no choice because geographically I moved away. I was like maybe like 13 at the time, so not like I could drive a car at the time, you know, because, you know, they don't give out driver's license at age 13, at least in the DMV. So, you know, I basically had to start over. And during high school, I found out that one of my good buddies was taking Muay Thai kickboxing. And that was during the time, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme's Kickboxer, the movie, that was popularized. And that's, you know, Muay Thai got a little bit of, you know, notoriety from that movie. The K-1 kickboxing competitions of Japan, that started to be a real big thing. So I would ask my friend, I said, you know, hey, you know, I always see that, you know, you always leave right away after school. And, you know, you always have like this this martial arts bag that you travel with? I mean, what's the story behind that? And he would tell me, like, oh, yeah, I enrolled in a Muay Thai kickboxing school, and the gym is located about, like, 20 minutes away from here in a town called Gaithersburg, Maryland. And I said, wow, that's pretty cool. And he was somebody that I knew. He lived in my neighborhood. And I said, hey, do you think it would be cool if I actually rode with you and checked out, you know, the school or this gym that you train at for Muay Thai? And he said, yeah, sure, why not? You know, go for it. You know, I don't see anything wrong with it. If it piques your interest or, you know, you just want to see what it looks like, go for it. Because he knew I was looking for another martial art to train in. And we get there, and it's exactly what I thought it would be. You know, you go in, there's like an actual, like, legit boxing ring inside the facility, a lot of punching bags, you know, hanging around, whether if it was like the regular style for boxing or like those banana bags, which is like the longer, thinner bags, but like more dense. And I actually go in there, and I witnessed the class, and my friend actually, you know, introduced me to, you know, the instructor or the head coach of the gym, of the kickboxing school. And, you know, I shook his hand and I said, yeah, this is a really good program. I'm really thinking about joining up because, you know, my friend here trains in Muay Thai. We have been watching a lot of, you know, movies that involved it. And it's piquing my interest right now. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, do you have any martial arts experience? And I said at the time, yeah, you know, I was a blue belt in the Muay Thai style of Taekwondo. And I'm just looking to just to kick again. So we talked about it. And I basically enrolled in their program to, you know, be a student and just to train. Like, this was like a kickboxing gym where, like, you know, it really wasn't for like rank or anything like that. It was more like a sport kind of thing. And that was all right with me. I was just really itching to kick again and to really train again as a martial artist. And I stuck with it for 2 years. And then later on, I guess afterwards, I knew that the signs were there were like, you know, not to disrespect Muay Thai, but, you know, it just something led me to, you know, wanting to go back into a more traditional setting of martial arts, you know, of getting ranked and, you know, doing, you know, forms or katas and going to competitions and so forth. And then later on in college, there was a martial arts class as a PE elective. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, I'm definitely taking that, you know, that sounds like it's in my wheelhouse. That's an easy A. You know, it's a, you know, way that I can just get my exercise and get it over with. And I found out that the gentleman was teaching Japanese Shorinryu karate. But if you had like experience in previous other styles of martial arts, like, you know, Taekwondo or, you know, other styles of karate, you can still wear your old uniform and your current rank, and you can just do what you do. And it was cool because, you know, I learned a little bit of, you know, the Shorinryu style, and it was definitely different from what I was used to in Taekwondo. I mean, I definitely saw some similarities, but, you know, it definitely opened my eyes a little bit in terms of how different systems do their stuff and what the curriculum is and, you know, the philosophies behind that. And when that you know, when that semester was over, I was like, all right, well, I have to figure out something. So I guess you can say for a while I became like this martial arts hermit and just, you know, enjoying life.
Yeah, I've been in that that realm as well. The original Kenpo school that I started at, I had to stop training there because I left for the Army. And while I was in the Army, that's when I got into Taekwondo and the boxing part of it. But when I got out of the military, I, you know, wanted to start training again. I didn't move back to so I'm originally from San Diego, and I didn't end up moving back to San Diego. So I moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area where I'm at now. And I wanted to keep training, but you know, of course, couldn't go back to my original instructor, and I never found a school that really spoke to me in the same way. So for a long time, I kind of did my own thing, and just kind of trained what I could still remember, and still just kind of go through my stuff as much as I could until I got involved in Capoeira, and then it just became the Capoeira show for many years until I found the Kempo school that I'm with now, and you know, kind of retrained my journey. Kind of similar to you, I had to start over again, and that was a little blow to the ego a bit, but ultimately it was the best thing for me. I learned so much more starting over than had I been able to kind of keep my previous rank. So I'm pretty thankful for that, and finding the right school, the right teacher that you really gel with and that really kind of speaks to you is crucial for the training. So
I agree. I mean, you know, you have to, you know, I think the most important thing that I tell a lot of people is that, you know, you can tell that the place that you want to train is a good school when you see things are ran very smoothly, and that you can see that the instructors, you know, they know what they're doing. They know what they're saying. They know how to teach it. They know how, and you can see it by the way that they interact with their students. And you can see, you know, when the students, you know, give that respect back to the teacher, you know, and so forth. And you can also see, you know, the way they interact with each other after the class. So, you know, when you see everything and all the checks, you know, check out, then you know that, you know, you got something good there. If you know, not a lot of the checks in the boxes are checking out, that's probably a good indicator that, you know, you need to, you know, step out of the door and search for something else.
Exactly. So did you get into the competition side at all? Have you done any competing?
Yeah. You know, at first, you know, when I first started, you know, we did, you know, I did some regional stuff, you know, like literally there was my very first tournament was literally at a high school in Annapolis. So I was like, that's great, because like literally that's like, you know, from our house, that's like, that's a 7-minute drive taking the local roads. That's fantastic, you know. And I remember my older cousins at the time went to that high school. So that was really good. And, you know, for my first tournament, I didn't do too bad. You know, I competed in forms and in sparring. I was a green belt at the time. Didn't do too well in forms. That's to be expected, because at the time it's like, you know, all I really wanted to do was spar. You know, I just did the forms because I wanted to be well-rounded. You know, I didn't want to be like a one-trick pony. And I remember, you know, sparring, and I did well. And I actually placed a second, which was pretty cool. And funny story about that was, one of my good friends, and I know he's going to shoot me in the foot for saying it and putting him out there. I had a good friend by the name of Curtis, and he was a great guy, real nice guy. And, you know, we still keep in touch to this day, thanks to the power of social media. But, you know, he was taking martial arts too at a school near our middle school. And, you know, I told him about this tournament, and he said, yeah, well, I'm going to go to this tournament. And we kind of made it like, you know, I guess at the time, like, you know, we were trying to do our own promotion, like before promoting a fight got big. you know? Mm-hmm. So we were like, literally have like crowds and we were working them. And like, you know, he was like, oh, I'm going to defeat you. No, I'm going to defeat you. Yeah. I'm going to see you at this date at this place. And I'm like, I'm going to see you at this place at this date. Yeah. And you, when I'm done, you better give me my dollar so that, you know, when I'm done, I'll go over to the local arcade place and play Street Fighter 2 because, you know, you'll owe me some money. So it was cool. And I got to really thank him because, you know, if it wasn't for him, the interest of even competing or the idea of competing, it would have never happened. And I owe that aspect to him. You know, he's a real good guy. And, you know, even, you know, and it was funny because he was the dude that I actually defeated for second place. So I was pretty shocked about that. But it was a good time back then. And then later on, when I got older, when I, you know, came back to martial arts again at the same martial arts school that I, you know, trained at, you know, for all this time, now being an adult, I started, competing in traditional martial art tournaments that were very big in the East Coast. Like, you know, like things like the S. Henry Cho's All-American Classic in New York City. There was the C.S. Kim, All-National Championship in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The Chongxi So's, Invitational Martial Art Tournament in Hanover, Pennsylvania. Of course, in Rockville, Maryland, there was the Ki Wen Kim Eagle Classic Tournament. So we were hitting, like, you know, at least at the time, like, the cream of the crop traditional tournaments. Because, you know, in our school, it was like, you know, we loved competing, but it really wasn't mandatory for you to compete unless you reached a certain level. But every student that was there was so jazzed and fired up about the idea of doing it. We made it a worldwide event. Like, yeah, we're going to go. We're going to travel wherever it is, hang out with each other the night before. And then when we get over to the day of the tournament, you know, we'll watch each other and cheer each other on, but it's showtime and it's ready to go. And I miss those times because during those times, that was like in the 2000 era, early 2000 era, that was like the best times, you know, of my life of competing, not for the fact that I'm competing for myself, but just, you know, competing alongside with my fellow students and just, you know, running the floor. Like if somebody got first place, we would run over the floor like a bunch of crazy kids. Like, you know, we just saw an ice cream truck full of all the ice cream that you would want. It was fabulous.
Yeah, I definitely know the feeling there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, those were, again, great times. Do I regret it? No, because I feel like that's what helped me to become the martial artist and the student of the martial arts that I am today.
Gotcha. Yeah, in the Kenpo side, I competed about a handful of times, and I'm pretty sure I got disqualified in every match. Would go to these open tournaments, and at a lot of the open tournaments, things like attack, you know, punches and kicks to the head were not allowed, and which I always found, even in my young teenage mind, I found odd for a combat sport, combat system to not allow attacks or punches to the face or to the head. Maybe not so much to the face. I guess I can kind of understand the face contact, but you know, I should be able to back knuckle somebody in the side of the head. That's not a big deal.
You would think so.
But so yeah, that was not allowed in the open tournaments. But in our school, that was Kenpo. A lot of Kenpo schools, when you're doing sparring, you know, head shots, groin shots are perfectly fine, but are not allowed in the open tournaments. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I got disqualified every match, and I didn't compete in the forums at the time, so that was my short-lived tournament career, and I may revisit it one of these days in my old age. At least, at the very least, the forums part of it, just so that I can say that I've done it.
Right.
And then in the jiu-jitsu world, I got talked into competing in a tournament, and actually did that. I guess it was been about a month ago, and properly got armbarred pretty quick. My stand-up game is completely trash, but but you know, it was a good experience, and now that I got a taste of the good stuff, I'll definitely try it again in the future. So and so I like that. So so now let's move on to did you get into the teaching side of Taekwondo?
Yeah, before you actually reached black belt in our school, there would be a time like when you reached first brown, which is like, you know, the one rank before first degree black belt. It was very common for you to try to help out as much as possible and to kind of teach, you know, certain aspects of class or help students out and so forth. I mean, I was always doing that throughout the ranks. Like if I was a blue belt and somebody told me to, you know, help this white belt or this yellow belt to learn their material, I was all for it. But when you become like a first brown, now it's like, okay, now you're given a bigger opportunity to do that, you know, on a wider scale. Because, you know, in our school, when you reach first brown, you have to attend all the classes as much as possible. So you have to attend, you know, the white belt class, which is like the beginner belts. You have to attend the intermediate classes, which is like the yellow and greens. And of course, you have to attend your own class, which is the advanced class, which is blue, brown, and black. And then, of course, you know, you had like forms classes, sparring classes. You had to attend everything. And I was literally being like a Mr. Miyagi in the training, you know, and it was really cool just to get that experience, to help, to teach, to give back, like how the instructors gave to me. And I slowly understood why that was important.
Any aspirations to have your own school, run your own school one day, if you're not already, I guess I should say.
Oh, wow. That's a good question. If there was ever an opportunity, for sure, I would love to, you know, have my own school and have, you know, my own program, because I would have, I definitely would have an idea of what I would like to do, you know, in terms of, you know, having my own martial arts school and so forth. But, you know, as of right now, I'm just more focused on, you know, my own training and being a student, and being in the position where I am at right now, at, you know, my current rank of, you know, third degree black belt. It's awesome. You know, it's a great feeling. But right now I feel like, you know, I'm still in a situation where I still have a lot to learn, and I'm still getting groomed and pedigreed to make sure that when I have that position, I'll be good to go. Maybe I'll be able to teach more often and so forth. And when that happens, it'll happen. And I welcome that. But until then, you know, I'm just keeping focused on what I need to do at this moment in time. And I feel like that's more important than anything.
Gotcha. So I wanted to make sure that we, of course, I want to make sure that we touch on your podcasting
oh boy
experience. But before we get to that, I've been fortunate to have had a number of people in the biz, the show business, a number of stunt people and actors and whatnot. And my understanding is that that you also have got to do the stuntman thing and the acting thing. So talk a little bit about that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Very fortunate and blessed to have been, you know, an actor, especially in the local film industry of the DMV. DMV stands for DC, Maryland, and Northern Virginia. I've also been blessed to have been in certain projects where I had to exercise my martial arts abilities for the fight choreography and fight scenes and so forth, and to also do stunts, because I figured if I can do everything, like act, do stunts, do fight scenes and so forth, that makes me more of a triple threat and makes me more desired. And that's what I want to do, you know, because as an actor, you want to do anything and everything. You know, you don't want to just be known for one thing.
Now, were you always interested in getting into the acting, or was it a kind of by chance thing, or?
Oh, no, for sure. this funny story. How old was I? I want to say I was 5 years old or 6 years old, right? And I was watching TV one night on NBC. And what was the name of that show? Family Ties was on. That was the show that Michael J. Fox was in, you know, before he hit big on, you know, on the movie scale and so forth. And I was really surprised, because I was like, wow, they're regular people portraying a character, telling a story, right? And I looked at it and I was like, wow, this is really awesome, to the point that I try to study their dialogue and try to copy everything that they did and say everything that they said word for word. And I felt like, you know, that was like a natural attraction. And then when I asked people about that, like, what is this, what they're doing, it was explained to me that they are acting and they're in a TV show and this is what they do for a living. And I was like, hold the phone, that's awesome. They're actually people that get paid to pretend to be a certain character and be on TV and things like that. Where do I sign up? This is awesome, you know? And I think that that probably was the bigger interest before martial arts. And I always wanted to go towards that arena. And in my later years, you know, I decided, you know, I wanted to try to pursue it. So I did like local clubs for like theater and so forth back in like middle school, high school and so forth. there would be times that, you know, after school, you know, when there was nothing going on, I had a couple of friends of mine, and we would always like kind of pretend to like have like our own like TV show, and we would just kind of do our own, you know, what I would call like amateur acting, where, you know, we were just this character and, you know, we could do this and we can do that or so forth. And sometimes within the theme, we either would take it like serious, like they were like hardworking individuals, or we would take it, you know, imaginative, where, you know, they would be like a superhero with this awesome power. So the more times that I did that, it was like more of a reason to try to do acting. And that was cool because, you know, years later, I finally got my big break when I found out that there was a movie called Deep Impact that was from Paramount. They were filming 2 days, about 1 hour outside of Washington, D.C. And for each day that you were able to film, it was $500. And I was like, whoa, $500? That's pretty cool. And I was told that, you know, you were to be a movie extra, and your scene is that you're basically running this way because a huge comet is coming. They're going to, claim all these lives. So you have to make it convincing that you're trying to outrun the comet. But, you know, in the end, you know, the comet got you. And I was like, wow, for $500, you know, for doing that all day, I'll do that for like 1 week if it was available. So at that point, you know, when I did that, and I got the check about like, I think 2 weeks later in the mail, like, you know, I got the check. I knew then, I was like, man, I gotta try for it. So I've been trying ever since, you know, even if it's on a more of a local scale, I've really had been trying my hardest to, you know, make a career out of acting, pursuing it because it's what I love, and to be out there and to get noticed because there's not many Asian actors out there, and there are not many parts that are written for the Asian actor. And I'm not saying that to be racist. I'm saying that as a pure fact. You know, how many Asian actors do you see, you know, that is an actual lead in a major Hollywood motion picture movie that isn't Jet Li or Jackie Chan, which their movie is strictly martial arts based? You know, how many actors of the Asian descent do you see that are leads in, like, you know, a major thriller or a major drama film or a serious piece? Not many. And I'm hoping to be one of the few that breaks that barrier down and to say, you know what, he was one of those Asian actors that did it.
Very nice. Yeah, I can relate as a black man. There's definitely, even today, there's still the typecasting and fitting, yeah, people into certain molds. So
right,
you know, to be able to break out of that is definitely an important part of getting into the business and getting more representation
right.
You know, we all have a story to share and we all have something to contribute. So I can definitely relate to that.
For sure. You know, it just bothers me sometimes a little bit. It's like, hey, we want to give you an acting opportunity. Okay, great. What are you going to give me? And they would say, oh, we want you to play like a person, you know, coming out from, you know, fresh out of Beijing, China, or we want you to be working in a Chinese restaurant, or we want you to be a dry cleaner and so forth. And I understand the situation and the philosophy that, you know, whatever you can get and take advantage of it because the opportunity, you know, there may not be another one. But at the same time, you know, from a moral standpoint, you know, I feel like, you know, there's so much more that you can offer an actor in general. You know, especially an Asian actor. You know, what about us playing like a businessman or playing like a, you know, a student at a university or maybe even like a culinary chef that works at a 3-star, you know, French restaurant or something like that. You know, there's so much more that we can do rather than the stereotype roles. And, you know, I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for anybody else, but to give me a stereotype role, I feel like in some ways, like I get it, but it's also at the same time, it's slightly insultful, You know, give us something a little bit better. You know, give us a better opportunity. And that's all that I'm requesting.
Gotcha. I feel you on that. So now let's talk about your show, your podcast. What was the catalyst for starting that? So for me, I've actually always wanted to have a podcast, but the thing that really kind of pushed me over the edge was both our shared guest and being a guest, Mr. Brian Doucette and his podcast, the Everyday Martial Artist.
Everyday Martial Artist, yeah. Yeah, shout out to Brian Doucette.
Yeah,
how are you, sir?
Love his show and love him. And listening to his show was a big push for me to start this show. And I feel like I'm going to kind of brag a little bit, but so he has on his show, you know, he says, oh well, yeah, if you have people that you'd like to recommend to be on the show and this for this and that, contact him. And so I don't know for sure, but I'm fairly sure that for his show I am probably in the top percent of people that have recommended guest. I've sent him so many names of people and a number of them he has had on his show, and but I'm pretty sure I'm right up there with another shared guest for you and him, and hopefully a future guest for me, Francis Pineda, have been kind of at the top of sending guest recommendations his way. So basically, I just got impatient and was like, well, I you haven't had such and such person on the show yet, so maybe I need to start mine so that I can get them on. And I've been kind of working that, and it's been really exciting. I mean, I've had the opportunity to speak with people that I never would have imagined that I would get to talk to, and it's just the gift that keeps on giving. So I'm curious, how did the podcast start? What pushed you to get that going?
Before I answer that question, you mentioned one name, Francis Pineda, who was a student of Jun Ri, the father of American Taekwondo. I recently interviewed him, and he is one of the featured episodes that I recently posted out on the Kim Hwang Podcast Experience. So for anybody that wants to check that episode out, it is out and available right now on the Kim Hwang Podcast Experience on all of the major podcasting platforms. Mind you, I'm going to give you a warning. That was a two-hour episode, but that was 2 hours of fun, of learning things about the man and learning about the way that he does things and about the, you know, his training and Jun Ri and so forth. It was really incredible, great opportunity. And, you know, I told him, if he wants to, you know, run round two, we can definitely do it. So I definitely would recommend you to interview Francis Pineda, because, you know, he's a definite great guy. You know, he definitely feels like he is someone that, you know, like he's like the person next door that you grew up with. And he's, you know, such a nice guy and very approachable. Now, as far as podcasting goes, the story behind that was, you know, I was in a point in my life that, yeah, I was doing some acting for local films and it was great, but I really felt like it wasn't going anywhere at the time. And this was like 2019, I was starting to think about this, you know, and actually I should say 2018, And, you know, at the time, one of my good friends, the late John Henderson, who was, you know, he was a Taekwondo guy, you know, learning Olympic-style Taekwondo. And I knew him because we met through a local stunt industry, that there's this local stunt organization that was based out of the Washington, D.C. area. And we had dinner one night together eating all-you-can-eat Korean barbecue. And he knew that something was wrong. He's like, man, I know that look. That's not a good look. What's going on? Talk to me. And I told him, like, you know, John, I got to be honest with you. You know, being an actor, it's kind of hard because, you know, you try to audition to a lot of these things and you don't get picked. Normally, I wouldn't have to go through all of that. I miss acting, and I just feel like maybe at the time I was like, maybe this acting isn't, you know, working for me as well as I thought it would. And he's like, okay, well, what are you thinking? I mean, do you have a plan B? And I told him, I said, call me crazy, but lately I've been thinking about, you know, wanting to do podcasting, you know, because, you know, you have a microphone right in front of you. You talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about, and that's pretty much it. And he said, well, to be fair, that's probably part of that is probably true. The other part, maybe not so much. But if you're asking me, can I see you as being a podcaster? Then my answer is yes. Because, you know, when you do acting, I see you and you're very animated. You're well spoken. You have a great energy about you. And it feels like, you know, for actors, you know, transitioning into the podcasting art would be a natural fit. And that's true because, you know, you name a lot of big wigs now that are podcasting that were actors or are actors or, you know, were in the industry, like, you know, the Joe Rogans or the Steve Harveys, you know, or lately there were two girls that used to be on the show Full House that played Stephanie Tanner and Kimmy Gibbler. They have their own podcast now. So I'm just thinking, wow, if, you know, if they're doing it, I'm pretty sure that I could do it. I may not be as big as they are because, you know, they have, you know, quite the following. But I feel like if you have a voice and you have a story and you have something to share with the world, why can't you? And I felt like, you know, that was kind of like the little nudge that kind of pushed the wheel to go forward in that direction. Because I've been talking about it for a long time. And I felt like if you keep talking about it, that's a good sign that you want to do something.
When I kind of had the idea and the kind of the official thing, I knew that I needed to, it was a pretty quick turnaround from the idea to actually, putting out the first episode. Cause I knew if I just sat back and talked about it, I would never do it. And I just needed to go ahead and do it and get started. And, I just, picked up my first guest and hit record, and hoped that the episode wouldn't just come out as complete garbage, and luckily it came out pretty good, and had a good time doing that. So
yeah. Now let me ask you a question real quick. Did you, before committing and being a podcaster, did you have any doubts or reservations? Because I knew for me, I definitely had some doubts and reservations.
I did. I think the biggest thing was just thinking that, you know, like nobody knows who I am, and I'm going to, I'll have, you know, my friends and some of my instructors and stuff on. And maybe I'll get lucky and I'll have a quote unquote big name, on the show. And it was never really my intention to just, oh, like, let me see, you know, clout chase and see who, what great people I can get on. I just love hearing the stories. But fortunately, when I kind of put out the call for guests, a number of big time people in the Kenpo world reached out, and I was just like really, really surprised that these big names were willing to be on. And so I just kind of ran with it. And so in with having both the big time Kenpo people and just the rest of us normies on has been really, really nice. And then branching out into other arts and having other guests and other viewpoints on there has just been really exciting. And I think for me, the big thing was, as much as I'd love to have, you know, millions of users and everything, as opposed to the dozens I have now, I mainly do this just for me. I want to hear the stories. I want to meet the people. And, you know, if someone else wants to hear me babble, that's great. If not, it doesn't matter. I have it for me. So that took a lot of the pressure off of, oh, okay, I gotta make sure this is the, you know, the greatest show or whatever. I mean, I definitely do care. I have shelled out some money on gear that I probably really don't need, but I want the show to at least sound pretty good. And and just kind of go from there. And some of it's helped my workflow a little bit, so that works out. So
for sure.
So like I kind of say with all of my guests, that, you know, there's so many items that we can get into, and I would love to talk about that, and we'll have to do, you know, two parts, 2, 3, 4, you know, through 500. Because I don't want the as much as I would love to, I can't make, you know, 8-hour shows. So we're definitely going to have to do this again. But we're going to go ahead and move into what I call the lightning round. So I got a few little questions here. Ooh. For you as we wrap up.
Wow, that's very similar to what I do on my podcast when I have guests. It's called the rapid fire.
Yeah. I love that. I you know, Brian does something similar, and I love it, but at the same time, I kind of a little it kind of hurt a little bit in that he has great wrap up questions, and it's like I want to use those too, but I don't want to. You know, it's not like a competition or anything, but I don't want to do the exact same things. I think our show formats are pretty similar, but I don't want to completely just take all this thing. So I was like, oh, we'll have to try and come up with other questions that are that are not ripping off his. So. We'll just go right into it here. So first question is, do you have a favorite technique?
Do I have a favorite technique? If it's a punching technique, I like the reverse punch. I always feel like that's very solid, and you can't go wrong with it. If it's a kicking technique, lately I've been doing pretty good with like the lead leg side kick. And the spinning back kick.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. I like it. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite form? Or kata or set or pumse or whatever terminology you use for that?
Well, I'll just say forms so that it's easier for everybody to understand. If we're talking about my favorite non-black belt form, I would say that my favorite non-black belt form that I liked a lot back in the day was a form called Lohi or Rohi, depending on, you know, what system that you go to. Because for certain systems, Rohi or Lohi was more learned when you became a black belt. That was a form that we learned as a brown belt. And if you were competing in tournament, it didn't matter which level of brown belt you were. That was the form that you would use for tournament. And you did really well with it, depending on, you know, the day and depending on if you did everything correctly. As far as my favorite black belt form that I'm doing currently right now, it's a three-way tie because I've done all three. I have, you know, placed like, you know, maybe second or third with all three forms, which is there's Gion. There's Gun Sangun, or some people call it Ku Sangku, which is there's a Korean version. There's two versions, the Korean version and the Okinawan version. I only know the Korean version. And there is one form called Shihokin, but in our system, we call it Sabagwang.
Gotcha, gotcha. Very nice, very nice. All right, next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Ooh, it's a tie. If it's bladed, I like commas. I think commas are really cool, and I like the way that, you know, you handle it. You can spin the comma, do a lot of cool flashy tricks with it and so forth. If it's non-bladed, the bow staff.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm very much fan of the staff. That's probably my number one as well. So I like that. I like that.
There you go.
All right. Next question. If there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Oh man. Well, this, all right. I'm going to give you two answers. If it was somebody that is no longer with us, I would like to train with the legendary grandmaster, the late grandmaster Ki Wang Kim or Ki Wong Kim. He was the instructor of my teacher. Ki Wong Kim immigrated into the United States around, I think, like 63 or 64. And during his time being, you know, a martial arts teacher, built a lot of grand champions, both in sparring and in forums. And the fact that, you know, my teacher is a reflection of him, of how he taught, I always had imagined what it would be like to learn straight from the man, you know. And that would have been like a really cool idea or thought. But I would never know because he's no longer with us, and God rest his soul, because, you know, he definitely contributed a lot in the martial arts. And just, you know, the fact that, you know, his name, it just had a lot of great reputation. And I definitely would have enjoyed that. If I was to say who I would love to train with right now, it would probably be my current teacher, Amos Johnson Jr., because, you know, I've been with them for so long. He, in his own right, is a great instructor, an excellent instructor from the Annapolis, Maryland area, who also built a lot of, you know, grand champions. And to be with him and to train under his tutelage is a privilege and an honor. But if I could get, like, you know, that one-on-one, to me, that would be a dream. That would definitely be a dream.
I like it. Great. All right. So then the final question, what is something that always inspires you to train? So I frame this question using the example of the movie Rocky IV. When you got the training montage, he's out there running in the snow and chopping the wood and lifting the rocks and all of that. And the music's going. Anytime I seen that scene, I'm ready to get hyped up and ready to go train. And get on the mats and do what I got to do. So, what is something like that for you? And could be anything, anything at all that gets you hyped up for training.
This may not be the perfect answer, but this is the only one that comes into my mind. So I want to apologize in advance if this is not the perfect answer that you're wanting to hear. I think what motivates me, honestly, and I take it from personal experience, it's like, example, when I go to class and I train, everybody motivates me. And the reason why I say that is because, like, you know, one of my instructors currently, Andre Dillard, who's a fourth degree black belt, he started, when, you know, I basically was established. And to see him, you know, come up in the ranks and achieving, you know, his black belt, and to be in the position where he is now, and him being a man in his 50s and, you know, still training and so forth, and has stayed very dedicated, that's a great motivator to me, because I feel like, you know, he and I are not that far off from, you know, from the age generational gap. You know, he's in his 50s. I will be in my 50s in about 3 years, you know, and to still see him train and to have that passion and to, you know, do what he does on an everyday basis is a great motivator, because I'm like thinking, if he can do it, I definitely can do it. And to see, like, the younger generation in my school just, you know, doing so well and training hard and dedicating themselves and being the best that, you know, they can possibly be, and to see them do that with such, you know, energy and vigor and desire and wanting to be the best, that motivates me too, because I feel like, wow, if they have that passion and they're putting up the effort and putting in that hard work, there should be no reason why I can't too. So I feel like, you know, everybody in, you know, my school motivates me, because it's like, you know, I want to see them succeed, and I see that, and at the same time, they want me to succeed, and they want me to do well, and they want to see that.
I like it. I like it. It's great. Great answer. Great answer. All right. So now we are at the point for shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you like, or anything else that you wanted to get out there that we didn't cover. Now is your chance. You have the floor, and then we will close out from there.
Awesome. Well, first off, again, Reggie, I want to thank you so much for this opportunity to be on your podcast. It was a great moment, a great experience. Anytime that I can be a guest on somebody's podcast show, it's awesome, you know, and it makes it a little bit easier because I'm not the host, so I can actually be the guest. And, you know, thumbs up to my Empty Hands podcast, because you guys are amazing. So there you go. If you guys want to get to know me a little bit better, obviously, as we discussed, I have my own podcast called the Kim Hwang Podcast Experience. It's on all of the major podcasting platforms. You know, we have Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Amazon Music, YouTube Music, we are on Audible, and most recently, we are on iHeartRadio. I try to be consistent in trying to put, like, a new episode every week, in terms of, like, a full-fledged episode, like an hour at least. And the last full-fledged episode that we have, again, we interviewed a student of the late Grandmaster Jun Ri, Mr. Francis Panita, who's based out of the Washington, D.C. area, specifically Arlington, Virginia. So if you want to know more about him and, you know, my styles of podcasting, you can go ahead and check that episode out, or any other episode. If you want to see me in acting, the one movie that I was in about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, it's a movie that's out right now on Tubi, if you want to see it for free, called Miscalculated. If you want to actually support it, it's actually also on Amazon Prime Video on sale for $5. And for, you know, the acting industry and for the film industry, when you buy their movie, it means a lot, because the movie, the capital they raise will go towards the next project. And I definitely want to see my friend who was the director and the star of that film, Mr. Romel Xavier Morales. I want to see him do well. I want to see him succeed. I want him to make more movies. And, you know, again, you know, movies cannot be made without you, the audience, and you wanting to help us out by putting out the name of the movie and spreading it out, and even investing, you know, as much as $5 to own a digitized copy, you know. So if you want to check that out, it is, again, on Tubi and on Prime Video. Again, the movie is called Miscalculated. I play a bad guy, and he's definitely the baddest of the bad guys, and that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to give any spoilers, so please go ahead and check Miscalculated out.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, no, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on and sharing your story, and I've definitely listened to some of the episodes of your show and thoroughly enjoy it. So for the listeners out there, definitely check out his show and hear all the wonderful things that he's got going on, and we will certainly continue following your journey. And yeah, just once again, thank you so much for being on, and we'll definitely have to do this again in the future. And yeah, thank you.
Yeah, yes, sir. I'll look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.